free, right to life and liberty. Open your eyes and you will see that America is still the land of the free.
Welcome to the Voice of Freedom, your national beacon of liberty. Now, here's your Voice of Freedom, Brent Johnson.
The first and foremost of your God-given unalienable rights is the right to life. You have a right to be alive because you are alive. Not because some government passed some law authorizing you to be alive. Your right to life is not subject to government controls, ever. The government never gets to decide whether or not you can be alive. Now, your right to life carries with it an implication that you have a right to defend your life. If somebody is coming at you and trying to attack you, you have a right to defend yourself. If somebody is trying to kill you, you have a right to defend your life with whatever means is available to you. You're not required to apply for a permit to defend your life. Call up 911. Hey, I have somebody here who is about to kill me. I just want your permission to fight back. Is that okay? Obviously, that's ridiculous. Your right to live implies a right to defend your life. And your right to defend your life implies your right to utilize whatever tools are available for its defense. Let's go back to the purpose of law and government. The United States of America was founded on the principles enshrined in the Declaration of Independence, to wit, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights. Among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Now, I'd like to ask a question. How many of you listening to this broadcast were created by government? Well, if you were not created by government, then you didn't get your unalienable rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness from government. Your rights come from a source that is a higher authority than government. Government will tell you that there is no higher authority, but that is simply not true. The very next words in the Declaration, right after life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, are to secure these rights, governments are instituted. I want you to pay attention to that. Under our system, which is founded on the principles enshrined in the Declaration of Independence, the purpose of government, the reason we allow government to exist in the first place, the primary function of government, above all other concerns, is to secure your unalienable rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Now, the very next sentence in the Declaration of Independence reads, whenever any form of government becomes destructive to these ends, meaning becomes destructive to the ends of securing your unalienable God-given rights, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it. Now, this clearly puts the power over the government in the hands of the people, not the other way around. The people are superior to the government. The Creator is superior to the people. In our republic, no government can operate outside of the principles outlined in the Declaration of Independence. To do so is an act of usurpation. Usurpation is the legal justification for armed revolution given in the Declaration of Independence. It is spoken of many, many times in the Declaration because what was going on at that time was the forcible separation from England into its own independent republic of the United States of America. And the justification given was that there are higher laws than the laws of the king, and the king has usurped authority reserved for the higher power. So let's take a look at usurpation. An act of usurpation is an act of non-law. It has no legal significance or effect whatsoever. Acts of usurpation are to be disregarded, disobeyed, and ignored. For example, let's say that I just decreed a law. The law is that you must pay me 90% of everything that you earn. If you don't, you go to jail. Come on, pay me. Now, why aren't you rushing out to pay me? Don't you want to not go to jail? Don't you want to remain free? But you're not rushing out to pay me. Why not? Because you do not recognize the legal significance or effect of the law that I just decreed. You do not see it as a valid law just because I said that it is. Now, why not? Because you do not recognize me as having the authority to make such a law. And therefore, my claim to that authority is an act of usurpation. Since you are part of we the people, and since we the people are the final determiners of what is legitimate, then your determination that I am not a legitimate lawgiver in this regard is final. So why is it that you so quickly go out and obey people who claim they have authority to make law? If the police tell you to do something, you do it. Why? Because they have a badge? Because they have a gun? Does that make it lawful? Just because the government says something, does that make it lawful? The Constitution for the United States was created within the framework of the principles enshrined in the Declaration of Independence to regulate, control, and restrict the activities of government. The federal constitution restricts the federal government. The state constitutions restrict the state governments. The constitutions are the system of laws that define what the government can and cannot do. If the government attempts to do something that it is not authorized to do by the constitution, not by some act of Congress, not by some legislative act or some executive order, but by the Constitution, by the words written in the Constitution and the meaning ascribed to those words when they were written. If the government doesn't have authority to do something under those terms, then it doesn't have the authority to do that something, period. And then if it attempts to do that something, the government is engaging in an act of usurpation, which is the legal justification for armed revolution, at least in our republic. The 10 Articles of the Bill of Rights, which is a separate document with its own preamble, were made part of the United States Constitution prior to its ratification as a condition of its ratification. That means they are a permanent and original part of the Constitution. Even though many people regard them as amendments, they are only amendments to the original written Constitution, not the original enacted Constitution. The Constitution in its original enacted legal form includes the 10 Articles of the Bill of Rights because the Constitution would not have been ratified without the inclusion of those articles. So they are not true amendments. They are actually part of the permanent part of the Constitution, which includes the preamble, the initial 7 articles, and then the 10 articles of the Bill of Rights. Article 2, often referred to as the Second Amendment, reads, "A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed." This is an instruction to the government. Now, I want to take a look at the two halves of this article. The first one focuses on a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. What I want to do is take a look at the meaning of the words, a well-regulated militia. Now, the meaning of these words can only be determined by the meaning of the words in 1791 when the article was written. If over a 200-year period we have changed the meaning of words, that does not change the meaning of the second article of the Bill of Rights. It means what it meant when it was written and ratified. That's what it means. And in 1791, the term well-regulated meant in good working order. Militia meant non-military citizens. citizens of the states who were not members of the official military. That was the unorganized militia. So a well-regulated militia actually means a bunch of ordinary citizens who are armed with weapons that are in good working order. Now, let's do a little bit of word substitution here. A bunch of ordinary citizens who are armed with weaponry that is in good working order are necessary to the security of a free state. When you put it that way, it makes total sense as to what it means. Now you take the second half of it. Therefore, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. In other words, this article is all about what is required for the security of a free state. A free state. Not the security of a state, but the security of a free state. If we are to remain free, we must have ordinary people armed. That's what's necessary to the security of a free state. And therefore, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. It does not indicate that the government may regulate, by our definition of the word regulate in today's society, the bearing of arms. Government has no legitimate authority to in any way infringe on the right to keep and bear arms. No law that purports to control the keeping or bearing of firearms is valid. It makes no difference whatsoever what the reason for the so-called law is. It makes no difference whatsoever all the arguments that the government brings to bear, especially since when you consider that the government, in passing laws that regulate and infringe upon your right to bear arms, those are non-laws. They are acts of usurpation. They are non-laws without any legal significance or effect whatsoever, and they are to be disobeyed and ignored. Notwithstanding this fact, the kind of government that attempts acts of usurpation should not be believed when it gives reasons designed to justify those acts. Whatever it says, whatever statistics it brings forward, whatever rationale it provides, these should be disregarded, because a government that usurps authority is a criminal government. And when a criminal tells you something, you shouldn't listen. You certainly shouldn't believe it. According to the government, the usurping criminal government, all firearms laws are based on the Gun Control Act of 1968. This is an act of Congress that set the foundation for the control and regulation of the ownership of firearms. Because the second article to the Bill of Rights, as part of the Constitution, says that the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, period. The Gun Control Act is an act of usurpation and therefore is an act of non-law. But what you may find more interesting is the history, foundation, and the source of the Gun Control Act of 1968. Several months before this act was voted on and passed in Congress, Senator Thomas Dodd, who was one of the key authors of the Gun Control Act of 1968, was found to have in his possession, not 3 months before the passage of the act, a copy of the original Nazi Weapons Act of 1938 in German. In my book, The American Sovereign, How to Live Free from Government Regulation, I have placed in the appendix, side by side, the text of the Gun Control Act of 1968 and the translated to English text of the Nazi Weapons Act of 1938. The two are virtually identical. The question you should be asking is, for what possible reason are United States congressmen, representatives of the American people, passing laws that are based on laws that were declared by Adolf Hitler? That's the question you should be asking. Understand that the United States government will claim its authority for gun control laws under the General Welfare Clause of the Constitution. But again, You have to consider the meaning of the term welfare at the time the Constitution was written. Never would it have occurred to any of the founding fathers or the framers of the Constitution that the general welfare of the country would be served by having the government take care of every single facet of life. If general welfare was supposed to be a broad paintbrush to authorize government to do any number of things, then why is it that Article 1 of the U.S. Constitution specifies only 17 powers with which the United States government has been imbued by that same Constitution? I say to you that any claims by the government to legitimize any laws that restrict the ownership, purchase, transfer, sale, or use of firearms by private citizens is non-law, without any legal significance or effect whatsoever, and is to be disregarded, disobeyed, and ignored. What about firearm registration? That sounds like a good idea, doesn't it? I mean, if people are going to walk around with these deadly weapons, at least we should know who they are, right? Registration creates joinder and jurisdiction with the administrative government agencies. That's what happens when you register a firearm. You place yourself and the firearm under the authority of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and the United States government. By registering a firearm, you actually reclassify it as a government-controlled piece of property. Please understand, you commit no crime by not registering your private property, even if that property includes firearms. People ask me regularly, how do I purchase firearms without going to a licensed firearms dealer? Well, that's not that difficult. I remember a time several years ago I purchased an SKS from somebody who had advertised it in one of those thrifty nickel newspapers. I went over, I paid him, he gave me the gun. I mean, I tried it out, made sure it was functional. He gave me the gun, I gave him the money, and the deal was done. End discussion. No registration. I never got in any trouble for it. Of course, I didn't go out there and try and use the rifle for some kind of crime. Almost every place in the country has one of these thrifty nickel type free classified ads and things of that sort. And you could pick up one of these and you'll find ads to sell firearms. Alternatively, go to a gun show. Now, I would never purchase a firearm at a gun show, and I recommend to you that you don't. But you go to a gun show and you meet people and you make friends with some of the exhibitors. What you're looking for is somebody you can meet outside of the gun show for a private sale, a private purchase. And if you're looking for it, you'll find it, because it's not illegal to do. And if somebody suggests that it is, that somebody is the one who is lying to you. I want you to hear what our founding fathers and many American statesmen over the last 200 years have said concerning your right to own firearms. John Adams, arms in the hands of the citizens may be used at individual discretion for the defense of the country, the overthrow of tyranny, or private self-defense. Alexander Hamilton, Federalist Paper number 28, if the representatives of the people betray their constituents, then there is no resource left but in the exertion of that original right of self-defense which is paramount to all positive forms of government, and which, against the usurpations of the natural rulers, may be exerted with infinitely better prospect of success than against those of the rulers of an individual state. In a single state, if the persons entrusted with supreme power become usurpers, the different parcels, subdivisions, or districts of which it consists, having no distinct governments in each, can take no regular measures for defense. The citizens must rush tumultuously to arms without concert, without system, without resource, except in their courage and despair. John F. Kennedy. Today, we need a nation of minutemen, citizens who are not only prepared to take arms, but citizens who regard the preservation of freedom as the basic purpose of their daily life. Dr. Alan Keyes, The Armed Defense of Liberty, July 30th, 1999. All human beings are created equal. They need no title or qualification beyond their simple humanity in order to command respect for their intrinsic human dignity, their unalienable rights. The purpose of government is to secure these rights, and no government is just or legitimate if it systematically violates them. And finally, John Locke, whose principles and philosophies were used by the likes of Thomas Paine, Thomas Jefferson, and Benjamin Franklin in writing the Declaration, crafting the Constitution, and birthing the United States of America. John Locke, in his second treatise on civil government: "The people cannot delegate to government the power to do anything that would be unlawful for them to do themselves. Whenever legislators endeavor to take away and destroy the property of the people, or to reduce them to slavery under arbitrary power, they put themselves into a state of war with the people, who are thereupon absolved from any further obedience, and are left to the common refuge which God hath provided for all men against force and violence. Whensoever, therefore, the legislative shall transgress the fundamental rule of society, and either by ambition, fear, folly, or corruption, endeavor to grasp themselves, or put into the hands of any other, an absolute power over the lives, liberties, and estates of the people. By this breach of trust, they forfeit the power the people had put into their hands, for quite contrary ends, and it devolves to the people, who have a right to resume their original liberty. The first and most fundamental unalienable right is the right to life. Along with the right to life comes the natural right to defend your life. And the right to defend your life implies the natural right to utilize weapons for its defense. Your right to life allows you to have any weapon that the government possesses, because the Constitution, the Declaration, all of the protections of your rights that are enshrined in our Republic's laws are intended to protect you from government control, government intrusion, government oppression, government tyranny. In the words of Thomas Paine, government at its best, when it's doing everything right and nothing wrong, is a necessary evil. In our system, government is considered evil. It is not your friend. And if there is an evil in your midst, and that evil possesses weapons that could be used to destroy your life, your liberty, and your property, then you have the right to possess the same weapons to defend those same things. Never let anyone tell you otherwise. For the moment that you allow another to dictate to you what you can and cannot do in order to preserve, protect, and defend your life and the lives of your family, the moment that you allow anyone to dictate that to you is the moment that you give up your freedom. Better that you die free than that you live a slave.
Thank you for listening to this edition of The Voice of Freedom. Opinions expressed are those of the host and do not necessarily reflect the views of Truth and Freedom Radio Networks, Freedom Broadcast Group Incorporated, or our sponsors. For more information about your freedoms and liberties, or to contact Brent, just log on to our website at www.freedomradio.us or call 1-888-385-3733. Join us next time for another lesson in liberty on The Voice of Freedom.
See that America is